Thanks for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there are some elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or even unlocking their growth, that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations. So every episode, take a journey with us as we speak with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts. Whether we're in Boston, Worcester, or out in Springfield, maybe even in the Berkshires, we'll be here every week and we'll explain to you more about manufacturing and what's happening right in your own backyard.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm Haley Steele.
And I'm Emma Mailman.
And today we are here to dig into the Levers second Biennial Innovation Summit. And we have our guest with us, Jeffrey Thomas. Welcome, Jeffrey. Welcome back again. I think this is maybe your third or fourth podcast with us. So welcome back.
Thanks, Haley.
You're welcome. Yeah, so you had a couple of themes, and we'll jump into this in a little bit, but we'll dig in and do a little bit of a deeper dive into the themes. I love these themes. I think this is important to hit on because I know this was also, you know, one of the key elements to you having the summit was innovating workforce development, innovating from within, which was the entrepreneur, and then innovating for inclusion. So, and you also did a hybrid format, and we'll dig into that as well. So it was a pretty exciting event. It was over 2 days and you did it in September. And then before we get into that, let's talk about, we were just talking as a group, Jeffrey has a new addition in his house, but and we couldn't stop gushing over Hattie, his newest addition. But we want to talk about this weather that we've been having. And Jeffrey, you made a really funny statement about the weather in the Berkshires. So what's going on out there with this rain?
I wish I knew, but it sure feels a lot more like I live in the Pacific Northwest than in Western Massachusetts. We have had a phenomenal amount of precipitation this year. And in fact, you know, we have the Williams Colleges here, and they have a weather station nearby. And according to their data, July 2021 was not only the wettest July since the 1890s, it was the wettest month on record since the 1890s.
Wow. Is it raining today for you out there or no?
It is not today. Okay. It seems unusual.
There you go. Starting the week off right.
Oh my gosh. So how many, like a lot, I mean, I'm assuming inches wise, do you have any idea approximately inches?
Like how many? I think there were about 18 inches in July, but.
Oh, get out. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then what do they say like for snow? Like if that would be converted over to snow, what is it? Like 1 inches, 3 inches? Of snow or something like that, or 10 inches or something. I mean, that's crazy. Oh, so do you think, did it have an impact then out there with like, obviously the Berkshires going out there, it's so beautiful out there and you know, the leaves and all that, did it have a real strong impact on then the changing of the leaves and the, all, you know, the, what do they call them? The,
the leaf peepers.
The leaf peepers. Yes. Do you think it had an impact on them this fall?
I think that the fall tourist economy has been pretty strong. In part because people are just happy to get out of their homes for a little bit and get in, you know, drive somewhere and see something different. But the colors have been muted for certain. And I think it's a blend of factors. With all the precipitation, some trees just kind of accelerated and dropped their leaves early. Other trees just like, okay, we're going to ride this. And so they've held on to their leaves. And then I think because in part there's been so much moisture in the air, we haven't really had a hard frost, which is what, you know, I think is one of the things that kicks off that real intense color for fall. You know, but you try to be zen about it. Go with it, right?
I didn't know they were called leaf peepers.
Oh yeah.
I think I'm officially one of those. I was going to say, I spent a whole day driving through Vermont, New Hampshire last weekend with some of my buddies just to go see the foliage.
Yeah.
Well, and for impatient types like me who live here, the challenge is that the leaf peepers tend to drive slowly and aimlessly. And I'm always in a hurry.
Now you had, so the summit, this was the second event, but where did you guys hold it, Jeffrey?
We were in Pittsfield at the Berkshire Innovation Center.
Okay.
And which was a great location for us. It's central in our long, tall county. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to draw folks from all over the region.
Why don't you just give us a little, you know, kind of overview of what happened at the summit and or how did it come to be?
So our region is known for natural beauty. You know, the Appalachian Mountains come through here. We have the beautiful fall foliage. We have some extraordinary cultural institutions here. So that's what the Berkshires are known for. Those of us who focus on economic development get to see additional things. And that includes some of the rather extraordinary innovation that's happening here. And a lot of it is manufacturing oriented. A lot of it is tech oriented. Nearly all of it is, for all intents and purposes, hidden. Mm-hmm. It's sequestered in the walls of these companies that are scattered throughout the region. They keep a low profile. Their markets are usually elsewhere, so they don't really market in our area, and there just isn't much awareness. But we have had the privilege of going inside these companies and seeing just some truly cutting edge work happening. So the whole premise of the Innovation Summit was to draw that out, present it to the community, and raise awareness of the innovations happening here, of course, but and also to stimulate further innovation.
Yeah, so that's actually perfect to tie into the entrepreneur challenge that you guys did, trying to grasp more of that attention. It was for $25,000, correct, for the grant?
That's right. That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit more just about that challenge and how you guys ended up choosing a winner?
Sure. And it does tie in very nicely because the purpose of that challenge was to, again, to draw out the innovators that tend to be hidden to the larger community here. So this is the second Berkshire Entrepreneur Challenge that we produced. The purpose is to support innovators within companies, people we call intrapreneurs, to develop business plans supporting a new product or service launch that will grow that company's revenues and in turn create jobs here. So these are really growth innovations. And something that we talk about is that's in contrast to efficiency innovations. Also important, but we feel that that innovation in manufacturing has shifted a little bit too far into efficiencies and cost reduction and moved away from innovation in some segments. And that's because of all the intense price pressure, you know, coming from offshore manufacturers. I certainly get that. But a more important way to be competitive, and we think the way that, you know, the U.S. has been a leader and a world economic leader is through innovation, by being the first in class and the best in class with your products and services. And we certainly do that here in the Berkshires. I can't tell you all the small companies that we know, niche manufacturers. A company in North Adams makes a wiring harness for the Sikorsky helicopter. They are the only company in the world that makes this part, and it goes in every Sikorsky helicopter ever manufactured, right here down the street from us. So it's an example of this sort of the opportunity, right? So the challenge gives entrepreneurs, usually not the CEOs or the presidents of these companies, but younger people in the companies, the next generation of leaders, a structure around which to take an innovation and say, we can take this to market. Here's the market opportunity. Here's how big that market is. Here are our market channels. Oh, and I've spoken to two dozen potential customers. I've validated that there's interest. And so this is all stuff that we have them do in our challenge. And then at the summit on September 16th, four companies from the Berkshire region pitched those innovations and their business plans around them to a panel of experts. And one company won this $25,000 grant from us. So the four companies were a company called Wellness Concepts. They do human resource and wellness fairs for employers. And they had a major pivot to remote. They'd done in-person fairs. They pivoted to remote during COVID. And they're seeing a huge expansion in their business. So they wanted to be in our challenge to lock in those gains and take it to an even higher level. A company called JM Spartan competed. They are the founders are two retired policemen who do training for crisis situations. You know, these are the situation we don't like to think about, but, you know, active shooter type situations. And they too had done in-person trainings, but because of COVID needed to switch to remote. And what their innovation was to bring in now virtual reality into their programming. So imagine you can train someone remotely, but you create a 3D rendering of their actual space, whether it's a school lobby or a bank lobby or whatever. So you're actually training people in their space without having to work with them directly. So that was JM Spartan.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, holy.
Yeah. Another company is Chamberlain Group, and they're known for making training devices for clinicians that are these three-dimensional models of the heart and of all sorts of human anatomy that surgeons train on. Some young people in their group invented a door stop silencer. This is for example, kids, parents who have newborns at home. And a slamming door can be just enough to wake that baby up that you've been trying to get to sleep for the last 3 hours. And they had invented this, and they themselves did a business plan around that, bringing that to market. And then the winner is a group that might be known to some people in the audience, Kripalu, the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health. They're down in the Stockbridge area. They have an amazing cafeteria. Like, do you ever, and when's the last time you ever heard those two words together? Amazing and cafeteria, right?
Valid point, Jeffrey. Valid point.
They have an executive chef there, Jeremy Smith, who is highly innovative and has developed a menu there that is completely in fitting with the culture at Kripalu, which is all about health and wellness. And including baked goods. They do some very delicious gluten-free cookies and some amazing breads. And they're so good that the people that visit Kripalu will come to the kitchen and say, can I buy some of these cookies and this bread to take home? Which they can't really do. So their innovation is to, and they won the $25,000 grant from us, to create a new part of their business model, which would actually distribute bread and cookies and other things out of their kitchen for purchase at regional retail outlets, specialty supermarkets and whatnot. And what's exciting about that is that, first of all, it lets people have access to these amazing things that they make at Kripalu. But also, it's a really wonderful way to extend their brand. And in this era, it's really great to diversify your revenue streams, right? And this would be a brand new revenue channel for Kripalu that they could develop as the market demands. But it was a very exciting event. All four teams gave very exciting pitches. And I love the idea that we had, you know, that range of companies in one program, right? Think about it for a second, right? A yoga center, you know, two cops that are teaching people, you know, how to react in a crisis situation, door silencers, health and wellness fairs, all sort of in one cohort, and it worked so well. Mm-hmm. It worked amazingly well. The cross learning was tremendous. The synergy, they were sharing ideas, helping each other out. And I think that's maybe another bonus to this program is that it really brings together the business community, mm-hmm. you know, in ways. I mean, in what other context would the executive chef from Kripalu, you know, be collaborating with two retired policemen working on crisis training, right?
Yeah, I think it's also kind of amazing. One thing that you had mentioned at the start of that was kind of that roadmap that the grant shows young adults coming into the workforce. One of the things that we always talk about is just the pipeline crisis and trying to get people into the manufacturing industry and such. And I think that the benefit of that roadmap is kind of showing them where they can potentially be in a couple of years versus kind of this open-ended industry that people still kind of don't know so much about, or the change in the culture within the industry, I think, is kind of just coming to light. So I think there's a lot of benefits in kind of showing that roadmap where people can end up.
That's a great point. And I'm glad you made it, Emma. I think a great example of that is the team from Chamberlain, the Chamberlain Group that had the door silencer that was invented by a young person. I think she's in her late 20s. And then her collaborator at the Chamberlain Group is a recent graduate of the Rhode Island School of Design. These two are probably among the youngest employees at the Chamberlain Group. I think there's probably 30 or 35 employees there right now. And the CEO, Lisa Chamberlain, who I can't say enough great things about, understood the opportunity for these young people in her organization. And, you know, they're very busy, and yet she carved out time for them to do this program because she understood the importance of that investment in the next generation of leaders at her company.
That's super.
Yeah, I think that's kudos. Amazing. I think that it's amazing that she prioritized that, just seeing the opportunity that can come from it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't think there's a big enough light shed on that. So it's really refreshing to see that happen at the top level.
That's one of those things we talk about when it comes to retention too, you know, with the retaining of that workforce, like that investment that she made in them, you know, it shows them like, wow, I'm valued, you know, I'm important. I want to be a part of this group for a longer term than just, I'm just not passing through, you know, like this isn't what I want to do. And that's a big, I wouldn't even have thought of something like that as part of a retention opportunity as well. So yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, and I think we associate this innovation word with, you know, tech and widgets and objects, tools, right? Mm-hmm. But actually the most important ingredient in innovation is human capital. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we do particularly well at Lever is this human-centric approach to innovation and helping people develop the tools and the mindset and the attraction to risk-taking, right? And, you know, putting structure around that so that there's less risk and there's the opportunity is obvious.
Yeah. Well, I think that's perfect because I think that risk is what kind of pushes people away from taking on certain opportunities that are presented to them. It's that risk management where it's like, oh, is this worth pursuing or not because of potential consequences that can come from that risk. So no, I love that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And it's funny. We talk about what we do so much. And every time we talk about it, it's an opportunity to think about it differently. But that's really what we do at Lever, is by bringing tools and structure, we de-risk innovation. And that's super important, because that's how you build an ecosystem around innovation.
You know, right. It makes risk-taking seem enticing, where it's like, yes, go after it, take it on.
That's right.
Well, kind of shifting now and into the layout of the event. I know you had mentioned that it was hybrid. Obviously, that went wonderfully for you guys. Do you want to talk about how producing that went, kind of the work that went into making that happen and making sure that it was successfully run?
In hindsight, it was terrifically successful. In the lead up to the event, it was a total nail biter.
Yes, that makes it worth it.
We began planning the event in early 21. And we had no idea where we would be with COVID, right? So we made a commitment right away that it would have to be a hybrid event. And then we'd have to be prepared for participation to swing, you know, in either direction, either fully in person, you know, in the best case scenario where, you know, the pandemic was over, to fully remote in the worst case scenario, right? Or something in between. And so that forced us to think about how to do live streaming and let people participate from their office or their home computers. But of course, we also had to attend to the experience for people that came in person. The key ended up being working well, human capital. back to that beat. We have an extraordinary person on our team who is just a few years out of college, and I say that to help reinforce the importance of having a young talent around. Her name's Jade Schnauber, and we asked her to figure out all the technology for the event, and she did. And we decided with her to hire a really terrific video production group out here called Clayson Creative. The principal there, Ryan Cowdery, and I say that to intentionally give them a plug. They did all the video production for the event. And so what we ended up doing is all the presentations took place in the main room at the Berkshire Innovation Center. We wanted to have a COVID safe room. So there was a live stream to another room at the BIC where it was masks only and social distance. And then we broadcast it on Zoom live. Took three cameras. We had one with a close-up on the speaker, a second camera, a little wider angle. So you had the speaker and our slides. And then a third camera, which was remotely controlled, which was pointed at the audience. And so a typical presentation, you know, we'd start with a zoom in on the speaker. Then as they get into their slides, zoom out, see their presentation. And then during the Q&A, we'd toggle back and forth between that third camera so we could see the questioner and then go back to the speaker for their response. And it worked incredibly well. In fact, some of the feedback we got from people watching remotely was that it was as good as television and that they were compelled to keep watching it just because the quality of the production was so good.
That's absolute best case scenario, huh?
Yeah.
We were lucky in a lot of, and I think in particular for having someone as talented as Jade Schnauber to figure all that out for us. But it really was, I mean, there was no playbook, right? Yeah. We really had to kind of stitch it together on our own. And so we ourselves got to innovate.
Do you think then, Jeffrey, this is something like, do you see hybrid as being something that you'll do with all the events moving forward? You'll kind of keep it as an option?
Yeah, certainly our major events will be hybrid henceforth. But I agree with you, Haley. This era of just massive, unprecedented, unfathomable disruption,
yeah,
right, has forced us all to think differently, work differently, be creative. And for me, the most exciting part about these hybrid events is it pushes us toward inclusivity, mm-hmm. right? If you have, you know, if you're stuck at home, you know, for whatever reason, or you have an elderly relative that you don't want to risk, you know, giving COVID to, mm-hmm. Without the hybrid piece, you would have been excluded for participating. Mm-hmm. And as it stood, we had more than 200 people involved in the summit, and a quarter of them participated fully remotely. So many people that were there live in person said to me, Jeffrey, I got to tell you, this is the first public event I've been to in almost 2 years. And yeah. I am so happy to be here. This feels so good.
I think it shows some of the positives that have come out of COVID. It's just the opportunity to reach more people. So now, instead of just having it in person, it does open up doors for people that like the ones that you had said that are stuck at home, or maybe there's a conflict in the morning and they plan to go live and now they can't. And now they have the opportunity to access it on, you know, a different platform. I think mm-hmm. in the future, hopefully that's all kind of entangled as one, mm-hmm. so that everyone has the opportunity to attend events like yours.
It gives you a little bit more of that work-life balance too. You know, mm-hmm. we talk about that as being one of the ways to retain, you know, the workforce and having that and the value that you're giving them and saying, you know, okay, I understand you can't, you know, drive or hop in a car and go, or, you know, the fears of you may have for, you know, or it could be a new parent that needs one of those door silencers that's looking and saying, you know, I have a new baby at home, but I still want to be a part of this. I still want to learn and grow to be a part of this whole system. So, you know, to have that opportunity, it is another part of the way to retain and keep them there. And what are you, what are you looking at for 2022? Cause I mean, literally we're in November. So we only have 2 months left of this year. I'm going to assume you'll do the summit again.
Well, Haley, you mentioned earlier that it's biennial.
That's right.
That means we get to skip 2022. That's actually the right cadence for us out here. A few factors. I mean, just the amount of time it takes us to produce it. Of course, it's important that the user experience for these summits has to be top notch. Mm-hmm. All right, because the important thing is that people leave that summit saying, wow, I saw some really cool stuff. I'm inspired. I'm going to go talk to my friends about some of the things that I heard about here. You want them to leave with this really excited, positive mindset. So the quality of the production of the event is there's just nothing more important. So for us to try to deliver that on an annual basis is a little bit more than our tiny little staff could manage. But I think it's also interesting that in a smaller demographic, there's about 135,000 residents of Berkshire County, where we account for less than 2% of the population of the Commonwealth. every 2 years is the right pace for our population density. That's a right amount of time for new things to develop, new stories to emerge, and then to sort of pluck out the ones that are most compelling for the summit.
I like it. What else do you think? So the Entrepreneur Challenge, you do that. That's every year though, right? That'll be something. That's
also probably the Berkshire Entrepreneur Challenge will also be every other year.
Okay.
In part because we're taking our challenge north. We are doing an entrepreneur challenge for the county just north of us in Vermont, which is called Bennington County.
Nice.
It's a smaller population, but it has some really great companies up there.
Yeah.
And again, you know, companies you've likely never heard of, put it that way. That niche manufacturers. And so we're excited about that. And then we may do some other types of entrepreneur things beyond that. So, but for Berkshire, it'll be every second year.
Okay. Was there anything, Jeffrey, that you felt that, you know, 2021, an opportunity maybe that came out of it that you weren't expecting that came out of 2021 and now mm-hmm. might be something you can use as maybe, I don't know if it's a platform or something that you can use, you know, for lever moving forward?
For us, something that's been top of mind right alongside dealing with COVID circumstances is the importance of inclusiveness in the innovation sector. Mm-hmm. And so for us, the opportunity was to tap our network, the Lever Network, which we've been developing since day one and is my favorite part of my job is all the people that I get to work with. And we were able to invite as speakers a number of individuals who from historically underrepresented groups and showcase their work. And in fact, the majority of speakers at our summit were people of color. And that's unusual here. The population demographic in Berkshire County is about nearly 90% Caucasian. It was so exciting. It was so exciting. I think, of course, the innovations that we learned about were exciting in and of themselves, but many of these speakers brought in their own perspective on diversity and inclusion. For example, we had Angela Dixon there who oversees the Berkshire Bank Foundation and has a lot of leadership at Berkshire Bank on their efforts in diversity and inclusion. And she talked about how they are launching sites that are trying to make banking and financial services more accessible to historically disenfranchised communities. And one of the points she made is the importance of having individuals working at those locations who look like the customers and the importance of walking in to a new circumstance where you don't have prior experience, you don't know anyone there, and then looking around and seeing someone who looks like you, someone who may have life experiences that are similar to yours, and how important that is. And I love that point. She made it much more elegantly than I just did. But a number of points like that were woven into the discussion about innovation. And what better, right? To in one conversation to be talking about innovation and inclusion. Mm-hmm. It was truly inspiring.
Is this any of this saved that people can actually go back and see this on the site or anything so they can like watch something like along those lines that would be good for them to say, oh, you know, I'm really intrigued by that.
Absolutely. We have video recordings of all the speakers and we will share those details with you to include in the podcast.
Absolutely.
What's
our
the word?
Connector link.
Yeah, to add links to the podcast so people can watch. But
perfect. I love your website too. You have it's such a good website. Whoever did your photographs of the people on the team, it's a full story. You know, like it's a story when you see, if you go to it's lever, LEVERINC.org. And then if you look at their, you know, their innovator stories, and obviously there's Jade. So we see a picture of Jade and just, there's Avril, like the pictures are so cool.
Thanks Haley for mentioning that. This is something that we've been working on for about a year now. I've spent years trying to explain to people what Lever does.
Yeah.
And you can probably relate. I mean, you explaining what Mass MEP does.
Yep.
And if you're not in the space, if you're not a manufacturer, if you're not an entrepreneur, it's like, it seems it's hard to get your head around. And so we said, you know what? We don't need to explain what we do. Let's just give some examples, present some examples of some of the people that we work with and tell their stories. Yeah. And so we have two also very talented people we've been working with us on this. One is our communication strategy consultant, Francesca Olson, who interviews these innovators and writes these really just gripping stories. Mm-hmm. And then a photographer named Eric Korenman,
okay,
who in my opinion is one of the best portrait photographers around.
Yeah.
And what Eric does, and I got to watch him do a couple shoots. He himself interviews the subjects while he's photographing them. And he's got this huge brain that allows him to sort of have two tracks. Yeah. And one part of his brain is sort of watching for the right moment to hit the, you know, the camera shutter. And the other part of his brain is engaging that person in a story. Mm-hmm. And so what he's able to do is really draw people out, yeah, getting them to tell their own stories. And then from that, the passion and the expressions and it becomes very natural. And so that's what you see here.
They are so real, like just, you feel like you're there with them in the room. You know, they're super realistic. I love that.
Well, smiles are warm. It's not staged.
Yes. So
it's not just the classic smile and wave.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And we got more to come. We've got innovator stories coming out for Carolyn Kirk. She is the executive director of the Massachusetts Technology Collaborative. She was one of our keynote speakers.
Yeah.
And she did a terrific talk, which again is available on video, about the miraculous MERT.
Yes.
And I know Haley and Emma know about this, but this was an amazing effort, collaborative effort, to generate 15 million pieces of PPE last year. So she talked, so we'll do a story about her. We also have a story coming up about Ken Turner, who's the CEO of the Mass Life Sciences Center.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got an amazing story, bringing and is one of his key focuses at the Mass Life Sciences Center is again about inclusion and bringing more Black and Brown people into the health technology sector. So yeah, keep watching for more stories from us.
All right, cool. So we will do that. So again, if you want to take a look at their website, it's leverinc.org. And then when you go to their main page, across their top ribbon, you'll be able to see all their different options that you can click into. And even on their first page, you know, they have a lot of awesome pictures, and you can click right in, learn a little bit more about Lever, what they do. And then I strongly suggest that you definitely look at their innovator stories, because they're really, really cool pictures to see. Yeah. So, well, thank you, Jeffrey, for taking your time today. I appreciate it, for joining us and being and introducing us to Hattie.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we loved it. It was a lot of fun. So yeah, we do. We appreciate it. And I always say this to you, like we have too much time that spans between when we have you on. So we've got to try and get you back a little bit sooner again next year in 2022. So if you have anything exciting that you've got going on, shoot something our way, let us know, and we'll make sure we get you back on again, and we can talk more, and we'll maybe get together more than once a year. I feel like we need to get together a little bit more often than that. So
for sure. And we need to get you guys out to the Berkshires.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's been a while. I haven't been out in, oh my goodness, I think it's been 2 years since I've been out there. Yeah. No.
Well, and if you can get out here soon, you know, Hattie will still be a puppy.
That might be the only reason I come out, because now I'm really intrigued. And yeah, I
that's the motive right there.
Yeah.
Do it for the puppy.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being a part of the podcast with us. We appreciate it. So thanks everybody else for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can always go to our website at massmep.org. So we'll see you next time, whether it's our space, your space, or cyberspace.